Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Leverage Podcast. We've got a very special guest on, Daniel Cates. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. I've been trying to get you on here for a long time, and just to give people a background on who you are, in my opinion, and I'm a little bit biased since I'm your friend, but you're the world's best poker player, and definitely regarded within the poker community as, you know, top very small amount of poker players in the world. I think you're maybe the most winning online poker player ever. I think you've got like over close to 20 million documented online poker winnings. You've won a WPT event. You know, if anyone looks up Dan Cates, Jungle Man, or what is it, Wookiees is your other screen name. He's a total beast, guys. And we've been buddies for a couple years now and traveled all around the world, had some crazy times. So I'm really excited to get you on here and just have you share about your life and how you became the Jungle Man. So,
yeah, well, thanks for having me, and thanks for the nice words.
So how'd you get into poker?
I got into poker because I was always good at games, and I wanted to play, and I just thought, well, the very beginning, I just thought, well, what if I could play games and make money? So there's poker for that. And, you know, like, for whatever games that I played, I always seemed to excel at them and, like, beat my peers. So I figured, well, eventually I'll do the same for poker, at least it seems pretty likely. And that's kind of how I started, but my start was a bit more rocky, I would say. I beat my friends at lunch playing tearing up little pieces of paper and playing with them. I beat them out of like $80, something ridiculous. And then from there, I played like some live poker because I didn't really know where to go. I didn't really check all the avenues or check a line because I was stupid back then. And still sometimes stupid. And I lost a lot of money playing online and was like kind of cheated, manipulated. Not online, live. I was cheated, manipulated a lot, lost like thousands of dollars. I worked briefly at McDonald's for a month to get some money because I really wanted to play. And then I built it up online very slowly, playing the small stakes, and that's the rough-ish beginnings. That's a short story.
And how old were you then?
I was 17. Yeah, 17.
Okay. And did you kind of take like an academic approach to it? Did you read a bunch of books, or did you just kind of figure it out as you went?
No, I took mostly an academic approach. What really helped me was the online training sites and their material, and just online material. That's how I learned.
How about coaching?
Coaching?
Mm-hmm.
Coaching, I would say, I did coaching eventually, but not at first. Not at the small stakes. It's been expensive.
Because I started playing small stakes limit, you know, online poker back in like 2002, when party poker was still available to play in the U.S. And I built up my bankroll just from, you know, playing small stakes on there. How long did it take you to build like a significant bankroll to the point where, you know, you were playing, you know, what stakes were you progressing from is basically my question. And how long did it take to get to, you know, mid stakes or high stakes?
I was progressing. I started at $10, $5 sit and goes, and it took me from there. It took me to get to $100 ones. I think it took something like 9 months, maybe 6 months, something like that. To play $1, $2 took something like another 4 months. $1, $2 stakes. I switched from sit and goes to playing heads up. And then from 1-2 to 10-20, it took something like another 4 months, something like this. I remember I was playing 10-20 at the time I was 19.
10-20, no limit or limit?
No limit, so $2,000 buy-in.
Gotcha. And you need how many buy-ins to play at that level?
I think a conservative at the time was something like 50, or a little bit less than 50, maybe 40. That's maybe slightly aggressive. Or slightly conservative, actually. I changed my mind. Slightly aggressive would be like 30. 30 is pretty feisty.
Okay. So what is that, like 30 times 2K? So 60 grand to comfortably play at that level? Okay.
Yeah.
And how that took 4 months, 4 months, 4 months, so a year?
Something like that. I don't think I have the months exact. Yeah, something like that.
Okay. I mean, that's pretty good. Do, you know, 80K your first year, 100K your first year.
It wasn't my first year, no. It was my... maybe like a year and a half.
All right. And then what's the progression after that? That's kind of around the time where, you know, I left poker and went into other avenues. And that's kind of where I started to see a lot higher competition, obviously, where people have more money and they playing against a lot of pros. So what was the next stage of the journey?
Well, over the next year, I moved up to, well, eventually, like around the same time, 100, 200. And I lost, I made close to like $1 million by the time I was 20, I believe. And then I lost like about 60 or 70% of my net worth in 2 days, mostly to a solder, Victor Blom. I lost 500K to him. That was pretty nice. Playing 100, 200. And then the next day I lost another 70K. It was not the most pleasant thing ever. But
what do you associate those losses to? Just a run of bad cards or just a better opponent at the time?
It's a mix of both. It's always a mix of both. Because like previously to that, I beat Isildur out of a very similar amount of buy-ins, if we had played 100, 200, it would have been a very similar amount, but just somehow he like ended up crushing me for, you know, the other way when we played bigger. So right. It's kind of like the ultimate setup. So it's a mix of that. It's always a mix. And the other guy, maybe they're about equal, something like that.
Gotcha. What did you notice from a lifestyle perspective? Because, you know, you're 17, like at one point working at McDonald's to to rebuy for a short period to then having, you know, millions of dollars a couple years later. What was going through your head? What was happening from a lifestyle perspective? Where were you living? Were you going to school at the time?
I was going to school at the time. I was thinking to myself, I'm gonna pass college. I'm gonna graduate. But college wasn't going so well. And the money never really got to me so far. It was just nice to be able to eat out every day and not have to worry about money. My friends and I threw a couple party buses, or rather I did. And they helped set it up and that kind of thing. So we had some parties too. And what else? I bought a car, that was cool. I bought a Lexus. And just in my head, I was just thinking, yeah, I'm gonna make more money. But I was thinking, for lifestyle, I was thinking, in the future, I don't think I'm gonna have to work. That was the plan, to not have to work, at least at the time.
Gotcha. What about from like a social life perspective, dating, that sort of thing?
I wasn't doing much dating at the time. I was, I dated a couple girls, but not very successfully. I was mostly playing a lot of poker and just trying to make money. Just like dating a couple girls, like a girl or two from having a couple parties.
Okay. So fast forward, we met when you were 26, 27? Or something, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
What are you at, 29 now?
30.
30, okay. Well, so what happened from that age of 20 to say, you know, 26, 27? Take us through that.
Well, that's a whole lot of things happened. So one of the first things that happened when, well, first thing that happened, so I went to Vegas when I was 20. I partied in some Vegas clubs and I played live poker and got kicked out because some guy ratted me out that I wasn't 21. So that happened. I lost $30,000 that way. That was interesting. But Vegas was fun. There's many fun things.
With 30K and they took it from you?
Well, they took it because I wasn't 21 and it was like the property of the casino, you know, the chips.
Yeah.
So it's just the formality there. And then shortly after that, one thing that happened was Black Friday, which was the government indicting the major US sites for money laundering and doing all this illegal shit. And so freezing all the money on those sites, which meant, you know, a lot of my money because I only played on US sites. And as a consequence, I moved from Las Vegas to, well, first I tried Canada, but I said the wrong thing at the border. And so they turned me away. And then I went to...
What'd you say?
I said I was going to go there to live there. And no one like fucking told me. No one told me.
Amazing. They're like, sir.
You know, I was 21 years old and like, whatever. I don't know.
You kind of need papers for that, sir. What do you mean? That's funny. So where were you? What was your plan to go? Vancouver, Toronto?
Yeah, to Vancouver. So instead I went to the UK. I went to the UK and I like traveled around Europe and played some series and that kind of thing. Mostly between this period and since I was 26, I was traveling. Although one thing that happened was like, the girl that I was going to see in Vancouver actually ended up moving to the UK and I met her there and then she broke my heart and I said, all right, fuck this. I'm going to get good at this. I just can't take it anymore. Mm-hmm. I was just like dying. So I like from that point, I moved to visit a friend in Vienna and started like trying to take dating seriously and thinking, okay, I'm going to improve myself. I'm going to do whatever I need to do. Because I just can't, this is just so tilting. Like I just like literally like what I want is right in front of my face and I can't get it. It's just right. Like infuriating. It's really like,
you know, it's always interesting to me to talk to other poker players around their, just kind of how they view the dating process. Cause I like to look at the dating process through the filter of expected value, math, poker. And I think there's a lot of huge benefits, you know, in terms of like poker teaches you all about, you know, if I do this, what are the possible things that could happen, right? And if you approach dating in a sense to that, it can be empowering instead of like, obviously that's better than just like throwing shit at a wall and hoping it works. But on the other hand, it can also create a type of situation where you're too focused on what to do, kind of on like tactical performance-based things, which can kill kind of like what people would call the chemistry or the magic or the whatever you want to call it of dating. But most guys obviously who are like me, who were poker players, who got into dating, they're kind of approaching it from a very logical, you know, why is this working? Why is it not sort of thing? And obviously women are very complicated. So when you say you were hitting your head against the wall, like what did that look like in a real world sort of scenario?
Well, a lot of it was just like, I just didn't know what to think. I mean, even to this day, I don't know what to think a lot of the time. And, you know, I would be going out and doing approaches and getting rejected and wondering why, and, you know, going to workshops and asking questions and what else, looking over like the kinds of things I said. I think I have the tendency to overanalyze. So that's, that was, I don't know if that's really a good thing or not, frankly, but I think it's a little bit necessary to try to understand.
I mean, one thing that a lot of guys who are kind of green to the whole dating scene is they think money matters a lot. And you're in a kind of unique position to answer this question because you had a ton of money at a young age at your disposal. And did you find it had any effect?
It definitely had an effect in some way. Mm-hmm. But it's a little bit nuanced It doesn't necessarily matter because, I mean, I could see it even being like not really much of a good thing. It's like, it's more like a catalyst, I would say, because like you could have a lot of money and have like a really shitty character, and like definitely that would throw off a lot of girls unless they're just really into money, and even then, it doesn't sound like a great relationship. But for sure, a lot of girls wanted, for example, like to go traveling a lifestyle and wanted to be around someone with a cool lifestyle. I mean, that 1,000,000%. Or they wanted guys to buy them things for sure. There weren't so many pure gold diggers that I ran into. Matter of fact, I only think I ran into like a few. There were always like some kind of mix of something.
Yeah, I think guys are kind of overhyped the gold digger thing. They think there's all these gold diggers out there. I think there tends to be way, way fewer than, you know, that are really out there. It's kind of like saying, like on the other side of a gold digger is a player, right? These guys who are just only going out to try to get laid. And that's usually pretty rare. Most guys at the end of the day want something more meaningful. And in the meantime, you know, they might obviously try and go and get laid. But almost every guy who I've ever met who has had the reputation of a player was really just a guy who was looking for the one. So I think that's kind of like the gold digger thing. She might like money, but she's still looking for that someone special. So I wanted to ask you, like, when you had gotten to a point where you were obviously very good and recognized in the poker community, was that having any impact on your dating life? Or, you know, were there poker groupies, or were you meeting more girls kind of organically through approaching or online dating or whatever?
To be honest, it was a bit of a mix because I was trying everything. Mm-hmm. I met girls. I can say that cold approaching was not working very well for me on the street. That was like fucking total death. Bars, I think, was going quite a bit better. It was a lot easier to meet girls in bars for some reason. I met like a girl like in every different way. Like I met a girl through social circle. I met a girl through online dating. I met a girl through whatever. And then, you know, eventually I found my ex-girlfriend who was just in many ways way better. And she really was looking for something serious. And I just like kind of settled with her essentially for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were living a lifestyle of travel, right? Basically bouncing from city to city.
Yeah.
Playing in events, playing online. And she would usually travel with you, right?
Yeah, she traveled with me. We went to many different places.
Mm-hmm. So you and I met in the Maldives on a crazy party boat. through our mutual friend. And that was like, I don't know, for me, that was a big turning point just in kind of like at the beginning of 2018. That's when I kind of got on what they call like the global party circuit, where they've got, you know, it's like another way that some people have talked about this party circuit. It's either really successful guys in business, trust fund babies, Playboy models, Victoria's Secret models. It's just like, you know, the 1% who don't have real jobs or who have trust funds, who kind of travel the world and party. Had you had any exposure to that sort of thing prior to us meeting?
No.
Okay. So I'm curious, like, because obviously you and I have been through this crazy journey together over the last couple of years. And I have a lot to say about it, but what was your, like, tell us about the trip and like what the impact that kind of had on just like your outlook in terms of dating, in terms of women, in terms of lifestyle.
Well, it wasn't so clear to really understand it when I first did it. It's a little bit like of a niche thing because it's not every day that you go on these trips and you meet a bunch of like Playboy models. Like, first of all, you don't even meet that many Playboy models and you don't meet them in this context. It's just like a really like almost like fantasy kind of situation. So I didn't really know what to think. I was kind of aloof And fortunately, I think that worked out for me because I didn't like feel the pressure of the situation so much and didn't like freak out or anything like that. It's just a bit my personality. Yeah, it was like almost like a little fantasy for a while. That's the best way to describe it, at least initially. Later on, I learned that people weren't as nice as they seemed.
Everyone's nice on a fun boat in the Maldives. That's for sure.
Yeah, everyone's nice on a fun boat on the Maldives. But a lot of the girls I found out had all sorts of fucked up characters and this kind of thing.
Yeah. So I want to continue on that thread, but I also want to go back a little bit too, and ask, because I know a lot of the guys who are watching this, I think they'd be interested in, once you started making a lot of money, you know, and you were kind of consistently bringing that in and knew that was coming in every month, like in your early 20s, and you started traveling around, were you focused a lot on like saving money, investing money, or were you just very focused on bringing in more?
Bringing in more. I was taking a little bit more of an aggressive approach, and the mistake that I made actually was like thinking it would be like the sorts of gambles that you would make or sorts of investments you could make that were, you know, high risk sorts of gambles in other industries would be, would be like not that difficult to actually do. But it turns out that's not really true. And it's sort of better when you're investing to take something more conservative and that doesn't require a whole lot of effort to research, if that makes sense. Or unless you like really know someone who definitely, what you need is someone you need like a person that's very qualified and that you can trust to look over these kinds of things. I think that kind of works, at least to make some investments.
Gotcha. Yeah, because it almost becomes more of a job to manage your own money than it does to like make more, right? You can kind of look at it that way.
Well, you have to look at it in terms of like effort and the payoff. So you can just like throw the money into the market. And I forget what the name of the fund is. I should actually do it. There's like a fund where you can just easily invest in the market and you'll make like whatever on it, or buy some real estate and whatever. And it's not that hard to manage and you'll make like a decent percent compared to what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have to do other stuff, it requires a bit more effort and it requires quite a bit more effort. And you don't necessarily make that much more and there's more swings. I figured out, and I went a little too into this stuff and it kind of really screwed me.
Did you find that once you started making a lot more money, there were a lot of people trying to exploit you or put you into fucked up investments, those sorts of things?
I think that there were some people that really tried to exploit me, but I personally think that a lot of those people didn't think that they were trying to exploit me. It's more like they just, they wanted something and they thought that they were offering something legit and maybe it wasn't. And like that was way more often the situation than people just outright trying to fuck me. It was just more people who had good intentions and just weren't very competent or didn't have good character or whatever, like, and like couldn't deal with things appropriately when things got bad. And then,
let's say there's someone watching this, they're like 22 or 23 year old poker player, or, you know, someone who's into poker or into, you know, other sorts of gaming. What advice would you have for them? Do you think, has poker changed? Is there still the ability to like do what you've done? And how committed would they have to be? Because, you know, I've seen you like in the zone, like you play poker hours and hours. And like, if there's anyone like dedicated to the craft, I think it's got to be you. Like that's how you become the best in the world. But like how achievable is it for someone to like try to copy what you've done?
These days it's going to be really damn hard. I don't really think it's possible these days, but someone can make millions, I think, but It's not as easy as it used to be, for sure. If they dedicate themselves, though, I think it's possible. Yeah, it's still possible to make like good money from it. Better if they have like good connections to social, to like private games or something like this. Like, this is much more promising, but it's a bit more complicated in certain ways because people are complicated. And as far as advice, to not do too many risky investments without really double checking them from many different sources. That would be one big thing. And if they're going to play poker, to really consider alternative perspectives a lot, because it's really easy to think that you know something and then find out the hard way that you don't.
Do you have any examples of that? Interesting stories?
Well, like one really obvious example for the whole poker world is the whole poker world thought they had poker figured out, and all of a sudden, you know, the computers started being able to actually solve these situations and look at and be able to look at all the finite details. They provided an interface for poker players to look at all the finite details. And then if you actually look at these things, you would realize that, oh shit, the plays that these machines would make are really good. And we've never thought of things like this. They would just totally turned like the way that everyone thought about poker on its head. Like they just revolutionized poker, and you know, people thought they had things figured out for a really long time, and they were wrong the whole time. They were wildly wrong, in fact. And there are many, many subtleties, but it's hard to look at the subtlety. It's hard to really like explain the subtleties unless someone really knows about poker. One common theme, for example, is people. What was I going to say? People like often think they need to protect their hand, but sometimes the better solution is to actually play cautiously on earlier streets and wait for situations where your hand is more protected, and then put more money in. So people thought about it backwards. They thought it backwards, and they never considered the alternative perspective.
Gotcha.
The reverse perspective, I should say. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, what I mean by protect their hand is protecting their hand from people being able to suck out on them.
Right.
People being able to
protect your hand from straight draws, flush draws, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically,
or over cards. Yeah.
At what point do you think, like, how good at poker do you have to be to where it actually helps your lifestyle versus hurts you? Because I know a lot of poker players, if they're playing, you know, the lower stakes or mid stakes, and they're spending a ton of time like grinding, you know, in their fucking parents' basement, obviously that's negatively correlated to your social skills. But once you get to the point where you're making good money, and obviously even before you approach like celebrity status, there's all sorts of social opportunities that probably start coming your way, going to Vegas, partying, having money to party, those sorts of things. So where did you kind of notice that intersection of the graph where poker was like a thing that was hurting you socially to where it was helping you?
Well, for me, it was a bit different because I just like didn't care to go out and socialize too much, but at least for a while. For me, it's a bit different, I would say. But I would say it's at the point until which you have some freedom. Like if you have something like $50,000, some amount like this, like you can have some free time. This kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If you have that much in free cash, I presume like that's good for going out and, you know, being better socially or whatever. You just need freedom.
Gotcha. So there's something that you said that I wanted to touch on. Like you're not super social by nature, right?
So it's not my main, go ahead.
No, go on. So it's not your main what?
It's not my main interest exactly. I wouldn't say I'm super social. It's not like my interests don't really lie more in socializing so much. And it was partly what made me successful at poker, because I was just always thinking it's more like my ambition was a lot more of interest for me. Mm-hmm. Or what I could accomplish than being socially. But like, you know, these days more and more, so being social is aligning more and more with my ambitions, because it turns out that, you know, by yourself, you can do some things, but the really big things you can do with other people in every sense. It grows exponentially, really. At least that's what I believe, and there's a lot of like empirical evidence for that. And as I've grown older, I've seen a lot more value in behaving more socially, albeit not necessarily going out in bars. Like that, I don't really like that much. I don't really care. Like, it's like fairly pointless to me. But being social and making good connections with people on, you know, things that we actually care about and that kind of stuff.
Sure. You mean more in a sense of like you can accomplish a lot more as a team than on your own.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Even though you're in a profession where you can completely destroy on your own.
Yes. You know?
Yeah.
Well, even like, go ahead.
I think that sort of mindset got me in trouble at an early age because I realized I could make money playing poker. And I kind of had this idea that like anytime I ask somebody to do something for me, they don't do it as well as I could, because obviously they're not in my brain. They don't, I'm not the best at explaining like what I need them to do. So I think I spent a long time operating under the assumption of like, why would I outsource anything, or why would I want help when I can do this thing alone? And I think that's a bad mindset to have.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I personally think so too. It's definitely when with help, things are much easier with help.
So I know last year, you were doing tons of trips and partying, and a few videos came out, and you know, people were comparing you to like being the next Dan Blazarian. Obviously now with coronavirus, like it's hard to like do anything for that. But tell us more about the experience like during that year, and you know, any crazy stories or crazy shit you wanted to point out.
There are plenty of crazy stories. One of which was that I was for some reason the guy that would give the porno performances like various times, like girls like fucked me in front of everyone for some reason.
Like in the middle of a party?
Yes, actually in the middle of the party. Oh, you weren't in the one in Cannes where literally I fucked a girl in the middle of a party.
Party happening everywhere and you guys are just having sex? And how did that come to be?
The girl just like kind of found me and you know what, I'm just gonna do it then, you know, whatever.
She wanted some love better there, I guess. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay. It's fucking crazy. I remember seeing some photos from that trip. What did the poker world think of all that?
Well, I didn't know about that one really. That one was.
What did they think when they saw like, all right, here's Dan. Dan's just kind of hanging out, playing lots of online poker, and then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, Dan is fucking crazy. Like, what? I was curious what their reaction was.
It blew up the poker world for a while. They just were thinking, what the fuck's going on here? Like that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, like it was just the talk of the town for a while when they saw like they saw that picture and the Tico Miro video, if you know about that.
Yeah.
And that really, yeah, for a while it just totally changed a lot of people's opinions of me, and they just wouldn't, it's just a bit, you know, you gotta throw a little spice in there sometimes. You gotta do some crazy shit.
They know Jungle Man's crazy in poker, but
now they really know. Now they fucking know. They didn't know enough, so now I really convinced them, I think. Well, no, I'm not. I partly convinced them. I don't think they know enough, actually, on second thought. So yeah, now they know I'm a little crazier in some other ways.
So what? Like, does that lifestyle appear? You know Dan Blazarian, right? Like you guys have hung out a few times. You know, does his lifestyle appeal to you? Do you like have aspirations to kind of be like him and turn it into? Because obviously he's monetized it with his weed business, you know, Ignite and the whole kind of spinoff that's created. Do you have any aspirations to live that sort of lifestyle, or what's your kind of focus? More on?
I do not. I thought I figured out really quickly that I don't want to live like that. That would drive me completely insane. My focus is more on, I want to do something to make the world better. And in matter of fact, I kind of went like almost the opposite direction.
Because guys like fucking, you know, every guy will see Dan Bilzerian's Instagram, and if they haven't obviously lived that out, they're gonna want to on some level, just that raw, right, that raw hedonistic desire. So it's always interesting for me, having lived it for a long time, and obviously for you, having lived it, to like, you know, do guys really want that? How many guys want that if they actually tried it? So for you, like, how long you were kind of in that lifestyle for, what, maybe like a year? Fair to say?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it was fun. I would do it every once in a while, but not, I could not live like that. It would, it's not fulfilling for me.
Let's put it in what sense? Why?
It's because it's not, it's, there's no, I don't know how to say, it's, I don't know, it is for other people. Other people really like to party a lot. But for me, I want to do something that makes something, I mean, I actually know very clearly, but that something that has an impact on the world, let's put it that way, or something that has some meaning to it, beyond just pleasure.
Mm-hmm. See, basically you found, well, I mean, there's diminishing returns to pleasure, which is, you know, and Dan's been interviewed, you know, a few times, I think on the London Reel. I don't know if you caught that episode, but he was essentially explaining how, like, you know, the first time you drive a supercar, it's amazing. You know, you feel the power of it. It's like, holy shit. But then the 10th time you drive a supercar, it's like, whatever. It's like, you're just driving a Ford Mustang. And then the return on happiness of driving a supercar kind of loses all value. Just like, you know, if your goal is to sleep with 1,000 women, right? Like, and you've never slept with any, the first 10 or maybe the first 20, or it's going to be crazy amazing. But then as time goes on, right, like the returns to that obviously get lower and lower and lower. And I think people are left feeling, you know, depressed, empty. And I think that's the result of having these sort of transactional values, you know, like if you're looking at women as like a number count or a notch count on the bedpost, like you're going to quickly find that you become pretty unhappy living that lifestyle. And, you know, like for me, I never thought once I started first going in on these crazy trips, I was like, well, this is, you know, I've reached the fucking, you know, the promised land. And then very quickly it became like, oh, this actually kind of sucks. I'm a lot more depressed living this lifestyle than I was just kind of like, when I used to be like a golf dork or a poker dork. So I'm curious what kind of what your mindset transition was and how long that took.
I mean, I slowly figured out I wanted a girl that I could be happy with. And then I figured out, it was very easy to figure out that, you know, it didn't bring me much happiness sitting around and partying. That one was for sure. But every once in a while, it's okay.
Yeah, it's kind of how I feel too. It's like people who are on that global party circuit and they're doing it day in and day out, I just don't understand how they can stay on it, right? Maybe a year or two, you know, but eventually, as with anything, I think you're going to get burned out. So like, I don't understand how Dan Bilzerian's still at it, because he's been doing it for like 4 or 5 years. And like, you know, if you and I can get sick of it, I think you would get sick of it. But
well, it's got even more of a situation. Like, I don't know how he's doing, but like, he's got really like he's like a really big celebrity. So he's got like more like endless potential, and like he can maybe do things. I don't know. He's a different person too. Maybe he likes it more. Like some people really like to go out and party. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I do. Totally. So, I mean, he kind of blazed the trail as far as that lifestyle goes, like becoming the next generation of Hugh Hefner, you could say. Right. So yeah, what are you working on now? Like what's, well, first from a dating perspective, how did you transition out of the crazy party lifestyle? What are you focusing now in terms of dating?
You know, I'm using some online dating. What I'm probably going to do, I want to do some social circle dating, but social circle is really inefficient. But when I plan on spending a lot more time in LA, and building a career there. And in that situation, it does make sense for me to do social circle more. And, you know, LA is a massive city and like meet lots of people. And that will be what I'll do in the future. I mean, I've been trying some cold approaches now and then, but it's like, it's easier to get myself to do it now, I found, but we'll have to keep checking. I will be trying some more in the future. I'm probably just going to try kind of everything. For example, I'm going to try to get on Raya, another dating app that's like more high profile, but, and then spruce up Instagram and whatever.
Raya, yeah, that's R-I-A?
R-A-Y-A. But it's quite hard to get into it.
What does it stand for?
Raya is a word for like heaven. In like one of the language or something like that, where they have really hot girls on there and you know the guys have to be screened pretty hard and this kind of thing, and they looked at your Instagram and some other things, some other like your contacts or something like that, they told me.
Interesting. So you're more focused on like finding a girlfriend or casual dating?
Well, casual dating and finding like a, you know, a girl that I really like, that kind of thing.
Gotcha. And then what about in terms of like poker and business?
Poker has been coming up more lately. Poker has been kind of had a small boom since this COVID thing, and it's been doing a little bit better lately. And actually it's growing in LA. LA, people in LA really like it. So that's convenient for that place.
In terms of like home games or like Commerce Casino, those sorts of places?
No, home games.
Okay.
I was thinking of switching to producing, which is apparently quite similar to poker in some ways, except it's a different kind of game. And it's one thing that's very important is it's not a zero sum game. It's more like a collaborative effort in which you create something. And it also has a big impact on the world. So it sort of satisfies all the conditions that I wanted it to, or many of the things I want to. And it's much bigger than poker, which is I thought is important. And it also helps to build like a social circle, isn't just full of fucking internet nerds.
Producing films.
Yeah, which was a big problem I had with meeting women, in general through social circles. Like social circle was just not at all efficient for me. I was lucky to meet Lori, my ex girlfriend, that way. Through like traveling and whatever, but and I also was considering doing acting. When I tried out for acting, it was like the craziest like what the fuck moment ever, but I don't know if I have talent for it or not, but that's just like some idea to entertain. There's a small chance I do that.
What do you mean when you tried out for it? You auditioned for a role at some point?
I just took like an acting class, like a debut kind of thing. It was just a funny experience. It was a really unique experience. It was like almost like a, I want to say it was almost like a destiny moment because it was just so fucking crazy.
Well, what do you mean destiny? What happened?
Okay. So this is what happened. So my idea about acting is that acting was one of the things that I thought was perhaps what I was looking for, something that's the most scalable possible because I wanted to have an impact on the world. And one of the ideas I came up with was like acting. If you could like be like quite famous or whatever, like that's a lot of leverage. You influence the media and, you know, there's all sorts of potential. And when I took the class, the teacher, somehow I got invited to this sort of invitation only referral only is what it is, class with like one of the best acting teachers in the industry. And she said, like, she was talking to the whole class and she was saying, like, something happened to me today that, you know, normally doesn't make me talk about these kinds of things, but now I feel like inspired to talk about them. To be an actor, you need to have a purpose greater than yourself. And one story that really illustrates that is the story of this tribe that always was able to survive, like this rising of the tide that normally flooded all these other areas. And then like someone interviewed the leader of the tribe. To be clear, like the fishermen always got wiped out from like the rising of the tide or whatever, but yeah, this tribe always survived. And then someone interviewed the leader of this tribe, and the leader, and they asked the guy, why your tribe always survives while everyone else, while the fishermen die? And the tribe leader says, the fishermen can only see the fish in front of them and the water in front of them. They can't see the big picture. And what she was trying to say is that acting was about more of like the big picture. And this really resonated with me because I was looking for something like a medium through which to do something like bigger, well, bigger than myself, for sure. I had a goal that was not just about me. And then she like turns to me and says, you're the poker player, aren't you? Do you feel like a strong connection with me? Like in the front of everyone in the class. And does any of this resonate with you? I'm like, what the fuck is going on right now? This is odd. And, but like what she said did really resonate with me. I was like, this is very strange. And I just like kept listening. And, you know, we do the acting debut. And we have like stories that we're supposed to read about people, about, you know, the characters and the story that we're supposed to play. She gives me the story about this little kid that was like to drive cars with his mom. Mom was showing him how to like drive cars around. And he liked to race he liked to drive fast or whatever. And his mom died. And then they were really poor and, you know, life sucked. And he liked to race. So he decided he's going to become the best race car driver ever. And, you know, he succeeded and he got like the girl of his dreams or whatever. And he did all this other stuff. And then, but that wasn't enough for him. He wanted to go on and do bigger races. So he left town and went and did bigger races. And I realized, holy shit, this person is a lot like me in many ways. And I like really like, oh, this, like he wasn't perfectly like me, but he was like me in many ways. Like I was like this, I see how he feels. And so like it, and then when that story, how do I explain this? It seemed as though no one else really got that story. I don't know if she picked that one for me or what happened, but it seemed to perfectly fit me, nearly perfectly. And then even at the end of like my little, I gave the tryout for my acting. And even at the end, she said like, yeah, he's so perfect, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, I didn't know that. I thought I was shit. Yeah. That's cool. And, but you know, I haven't continued it since then. That's about the end of that one.
Well, we've been doing our improv classes, so that counts.
Yeah, that helps a little bit. Still have so I might do that.
I mean, the cool thing is you could probably use the leverage you have from, you know, your celebrity status to, you know, get into roles a lot easier than you know, if I took up acting, obviously, like
I am actually relatively well positioned to get these roles, comparative to like a lot of random people, to any other poker player, matter of fact. I mean, I with producing, I'm, you know, I've learned, I'm actually like signed with a major, well, I'm, you know, working with a major company, but I have to learn. I haven't actually learned much yet. I need to learn a lot more before I can do anything with producing.
Right.
But yeah, so that's another.
I guess you could insert yourself. I mean, if you're the producer, obviously you have, you know, the ability to put yourself into things as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
That was interesting, man. You kind of explained the acting thing to me very briefly a little while ago, but I never knew it was, you know, more serious, which is cool. Cause I was going to ask you, like, how much longer do you still enjoy poker? How much longer do you see yourself, you know, continuing in that lifestyle?
I enjoy it a bit. I wouldn't say, I enjoy it a bit, I would say, but not, but I can't really do much more with it. It's not my goal just to like make a bunch of money and retire. It's not what I want to do.
At one point you were playing a lot in Macau, and I remember you told me you had some like crazy backers over in Asia, and you had kind of like solved short deck poker. And that was, you seemed really passionate around that at the time. What happened with that? What was the result?
I won a lot of money. That's the result.
Okay.
But the start of it wasn't so nice. I like flew to Manila and I thought it was going to be the normal game, but it turns out that it was this new game that I had never played before. So I just kind of, I flew to fucking Manila and I was just sitting there watching these guys play this amazing game and thinking, damn it, I want to play this game, but I couldn't because I didn't know how to play it. And so I like tried to solve it and work on it while I could, because I was like really frustrated. I was like, damn you, I'm going to fucking get good at this game and let me play and then I'm going to win, kind of thing.
Right. So it was more around your drive, kind of how you got into poker in the first place. Like, you like games. Like, I want to solve this fucking game and beat everyone at it.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. It's obviously you have a really strong drive to like solve games, math equations, however you want to call them. Mm-hmm. Do you look at acting in a sense like that, or producing? Do you see that as a game too?
Well, is not everything a game in some sense?
Sure. Yeah. I'm just curious at like how gamified in your head does that seem?
Well, right now I've barely just started. I've done zero for acting. It's not even serious, really. It's just a strong possibility. And the producing stuff, I've been doing some work, but I couldn't tell you much, really. I have zero real experience, I should say.
Gotcha. Any other interesting poker news? You still hanging out with True Teller and those guys in Moscow and playing with them at all?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, we see each other every now and then. But right now, poker is kind of... it's gone online because of all this COVID situation. COVID was like, I mean, this is like the random way that the poker comes back a bit, I should say.
You think COVID is going to make it come back more?
Well, temporarily it is, but not forever.
Okay. Yeah. What do you see the future of it? Just with
it's going to go more live and into the private game direction. The tournaments are going to stick around. And probably anyone who's trying to make a ton of money will have to focus on those tournaments to make it for... It's got a weird projection because one things that can happen are like the Japanese market can open up and the Indian market can open up. But one of the biggest things about poker is that it's a less than zero sum game in terms of money. And that makes it very difficult for it to not go in the backwards direction, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It makes it harder and harder gradually over time to make money, but there are little pockets of things like COVID or some market opening up that can make it progress for a bit.
I mean, you've certainly had a fucking amazing run in poker and you continue to have amazing run, but it sounds like it's not super interesting to you anymore, which obviously any game you play for a long time and starts to lose its luster.
Right.
So... cool, man. Well, I'm excited to see what happens with the acting stuff and the LA move. I might move back to LA in the not so, you know, distant future as well. So,
okay. Know. Well, let's, yeah, I mean, yeah, we're going to have to wait for that, but we'll see.
Yeah. Until now, I'm stuck in Ukraine, but not a bad place to be stuck. You're in London now, right?
Yeah, right now, London.
And is there, why of all places did you decide to stay in London when this shit broke out?
Well, there was a game that was going and I was already here and I figured it was better than the US. So for all those reasons.
Okay.
And there are a couple of girls here and, you know, that kind of thing too.
What's the best way for people to follow you? Instagram or Twitter?
Instagram or Twitter is fine. Okay. Instagram or Twitter should be fine.
I'll put links below. Well, it's a Jungle Man Dan, right? On Instagram?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, dude, thanks so much for coming on and letting me interview and, you know, letting the world see some interesting sights of the crazy Jungle Man. It's been great, buddy.
Yeah, happy to be on.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.